gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
the thrilling adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
the Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
I've got a few things to say about Superman.
The Superman Vidcast.
The world's best podcast.
And
Radio Kale from SupermanHomepage.com.
As well as the audio dramas Superman, Last Son of Krypton, and Supergirl, Last Daughter of Krypton from Pendant Audio Productions. Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weider,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Cayman Stoll,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V.
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
This is the Superman Fan Podcast. I'm your host, Billy Hogan. Put on your indestructible cape and join me as together we'll crash through the time barrier and fly into the past to explore the Silver Age adventures of Superman. This is episode number 216. The Superman Family comic book, cover dated May-June 1957, World's Finest Comics number 88 for the week of Wednesday, February 1st, 2012. And it's hard to believe we've already gone through 1 month of the year already. And this means that I only have two more weeks until MegaCon begins. And that will be the weekend of Friday, February 17th through Sunday the 19th. For more information as to the media and comic book guests, go to www.megaconvention.com for that, and also ticket information. I'm not sure when the cutoff date to order tickets online is, but you can find all the information on the website. And if you're going to attend, there's a link also where you can click on it and go to a PDF file, which will list all of the panels on the panel schedule for all 3 days. And you can print it on your computer printer to kind of plan your weekend at MegaCon. I've already done mine, and I've already had my eye on a number of panels, but I'll get into that when I do my preview episode in 2 weeks. More about that later. I'm recording this in the early evening of Wednesday. After doing my show notes this morning, I got out in the yard and picked up all of the piles of pine needles that my wife raked yesterday, which I very much appreciated. And then I filled another extra-large contractor bag full of pine cones. So a word to the wise, unless you really enjoy yard work every week, don't buy a house with a lot of pine trees in the yard. It's a never-ending chore, especially here in Florida. But I could be worse. I could be shoveling snow right about now, so I guess I really don't have anything to complain about. Well, on that note, we'll listen to some promos to some Superman podcasts, as well as some other different podcasts, and begin our look at World's Finest Comics number 88.
Look!
up in the sky.
It's a bird.
It's a plane. No, it's SupermanHomepage.com, the number one Superman fan site in the world. SupermanHomepage.com, covering the world of Superman from the 1930s to today. News, reviews, rumors, and reports. SupermanHomepage.com for all your Superman comics, TV shows, movies, cartoons, radio shows, and more. Everything you ever wanted to know about the Man of Steel and more. SupermanHomepage.com.
On May 30th, 2011, DC Comics announced the historic renumbering of all their superhero titles, and the internet broke in half.
Not true. That's impossible.
Critics and naysayers abounded. Confusion reigned across fandom.
What'll I do? What'll I do? What an unusual view.
Not to mention the first reactions to the Supergirl costume.
I hated her so much. Flames on the side of my face, breathing, heaving breaths.
But then the books actually hit. And opinions...
He likes it! Hey, Mikey!
Opinions began to change. The New 52 Adventures of Superman is a monthly podcast where John Wilson...
J. David Weider.
And...
Michael Kaiser.
Take a look at each of the adventures of Superman and his family of characters in Action Comics.
You know the deal, Metropolis. Treat people right, or expect a visit from me.
The Superman who appeared 6 months ago could hurdle skyscrapers and toss trucks around. Now it's faster, now it's stronger. How soon before it can't be stopped?
Superboy.
If resolving a situation for him is going to get me out from under these people once and for all, that's a small price to pay for freedom.
Release the Superboy.
Supergirl.
Okay. Giant metal creatures. Falling from the sky, speaking in clicks and beeps. Father would love this dream.
And Superman.
You could do so much good. We could do so much good.
I am doing good, Lois.
Clark's such a loner. Never really lets anyone get close to him.
The New 52 Adventures of Superman. Available the first of every month on iTunes and at new52superman.libsyn.com.
World's Finest Comics number 88, the May-June 1957 cover date issue, was published around March 28th of that year. It contained 32 pages for the cover price of a dime. The editor was Jack Schiff, and the cover was penciled by Kurt Swan and inked by Stan Kay. And it showed Superman using his X-ray vision to mount this steel chest, which had a sign on the top, "A Challenge to Superman and Batman. Open this if you dare." While Batman and Robin look on from a safe distance. I mention this cover because... And my reprint edition, World's Finest Showcase Presents World's Finest Volume 1, it shows the black and white cover art, but the sign is blank because on the original issue, the print on the sign was red, if I recall. And so I was curious what the sign said. The 12-page Superman and Batman story was titled Superman's and Batman's Greatest Foes, written by Edmund Hamilton. And every time I say his name, I'm reminded of the time in a previous episode when someone sent me an email and said that I said his name as Emil Hamilton, the post-crisis character, not his real name, Edmund Hamilton. The art was done by penciler Dick Sprang, which is always a treat, and inked by Stan Kay. Now, this is a big story which has stood the test of time, of only judging by the number of editions that this has been reprinted in, beginning with Batman from the 30s to the 70s, the greatest Joker stories ever told, which is where I first read the story for the first time, Superman and Batman, the greatest stories ever told, as well as the usual places, World's Finest Comics Archive, Volume 2, and Showcase Presents World's Finest Volume 1, which is the other reprint edition that I have of this story. On the splash page, Superman, Batman, and Robin watched helplessly as the Joker drove away in his Jokermobile with Luthor sitting in the passenger seat. And what a cool car that is. More about that and in my comments after we finish reviewing the plot. It began with Lex Luthor, dressed in a business suit, who entered the Metropolis City Hall license office to apply for a manufacturer's license with his new business partner, the Joker. The Daily Planet's City Hall reporter phoned in to Perry White about the story tip, and he immediately sent Clark and Lois to cover the story. Outside of City Hall, Luthor informed the gathered reporters that he and Joker were going straight and announced that they have a new invention which they will reveal at their new factory later that afternoon. As the Joker drove his new business partner away in his Jokermobile, Lex said mentioned to the Joker that their new careers should interest Superman and Batman, to which the Joker replied, "And what a surprise they're in for," which was overheard by Clark's super hearing, and when Lois asked if he was going with her to cover the story at Joker and Luthor's new factory, Clark remembered another assignment, which was, of course, as Superman, who, as soon as he changed, found a secluded alley in which to take off his Clark Kent clothes. The Man of Steel flew to Gotham City at super speed to inform Batman and Robin, and so that no one would notice him flying near Wayne Manor. He burrowed underground into the Batcave, and after filling in the dynamic duo on the developments, the Man of Steel carried Batman and Robin in the Batmobile back to Metropolis, where they landed at the Luthor and Joker's new factory. Once they arrived, Luthor and Joker announced that their new invention was the Mechano-Man robot. And there were three Mechano-Men walked into a bonfire that Luthor and Joker had started previously. And the Mechano-Men and their work clothes were impervious to flames. They were strong enough to lift a giant boulder. Another bent a steel girder, and another a giant metal rod. And Batman, Robin, and Superman were convinced that the Mechano-Men were actually a cover for a big theft, but they couldn't prove it just yet, and so the World's Finest team took turns patrolling Metropolis, with Batman and Robin taking the night shift, where they found Joker on the streets of Gotham dropping a steel net on a pedestrian, and so when the dynamic duo dropped in on the Joker, they discovered that the Clown Prince of Crime, or former Clown Prince of Crime, was actually testing one of the Mechano-Men by dropping a steel net over him, which the Mechano-Man had no trouble breaking out of. Batman realized that the Joker staged the stunt to make him and Robin look foolish, but had no answer to the question why. Superman took over the graveyard shift and saved a pedestrian from being run over by the Jokermobile, and the Man of Steel was made to look foolish again by the Joker when it turned out that Superman merely rescued another Mechano-Man, or perhaps it was the same one, when the Joker was going to test by crashing the Jokermobile into. And Superman realized there was something bigger going on behind these stunts, but again had no answer as to what that was. The next morning, Lois tailed Lex Luthor as he drove into the mountains outside of Metropolis, and she watched while Luthor zapped a cliff with some type of machine which zapped the cliff with some electronic bolts, causing an avalanche, which Lois, to her horror, saw buried a man alive. As Lex ran out to the avalanche to check things out, Lois aimed the machine into the sky and fired another electronic bolt, which caught the attention of Superman, who dug out the man to discover that it was another Mechanoman robot that Luthor was testing the robot's resistance to pressure. After Luthor and his Mechanoman drove off, Superman began to chide Lois for interfering, but she promised to stay out of it, at least for this issue. And when Batman and Robin showed up, they discussed the situation and were convinced that Luthor and Joker's stunts were an attempt to get the world's finest team to drop their guard, and they decided to try a different tact. If Batman or Superman couldn't learn anything, how about Bruce Wayne, who later went to Luthor and Joker's factory to hire their Mechanoman to salvage some industrial diamonds, which had were on the bottom of the ocean because of a barge that had sunk. Well, Luthor and Joker couldn't resist the temptation, despite the tight schedule, to prepare for the public display of their Mechanoman the next day. So, in no time, Luthor and Joker drove several of their, well, a small group of their Mechanoman, like about, I think, three or four of them, I believe, to the beach, and using their remote control, had the Mechanoman walk into the ocean and search the ocean floor. Unknown to Luthor and Joker, Superman, disguised as one of the Mechanomen, took the opportunity to take the place of one of the Mechanomen who got bogged down in the mud on the seafloor. And when the Mechanomen returned empty-handed, Luthor and Joker took their Mechanomen, including the disguised Man of Steel, back to their factory to prepare for the next day's exhibition in Metropolis. While Luthor and Joker were consulting on things, Superman turned his head to look around and search the factory, and was surprised not to find any big crime machines. But out of the corner of his eye, the Joker thought that he saw one of the Mechanomen move, which would not be possible, since they apparently had turned off their remote control. So the Joker and Luthor tested a drill and hammer on a Superman and decided, well, this must not be anything going on because the hammer and drill didn't put a dent into it. But once they were alone in the office, Joker and Luthor realized that the Mechanoman they had banged away on was none other than Superman in disguise, because the hammer and drill would have dented one of their real Mechanomen. When the time came, they loaded the Mechanoman truck to an office building, where they drove to an office building. And when the Mechanoman broke through the outer wall to take a safe, Superman broke his ruse to round up the Mechanoman as Batman and Robin swooped down, only to discover that Luthor and Joker showed a receipt which showed that they had bought the safe and had permission to demolish that part of the wall to retrieve it. After the Joker and Luthor drove away, Superman remembered seeing some extra clothes, and it gave him a clue as to what was really going on. As the exhibition took place in a filled stadium, Luthor and Joker demonstrated their Mechanoman as Superman and Batman looked on. However, the real Luthor and Joker were actually in the factory, and the Luthor and Joker in the stadium were actually more robots. And we learned their true plot at last. The demonstration was merely a diversion so that they could take other mechanomen and rob the sub-treasury, I assume of the U.S. Government treasury. As the mechanomen break through the front gate of the sub-treasury in Metropolis, Superman, Batman, and Robin sprang into action, surprising Luthor and Joker, who expected that they were at the demonstration of the mechanomen. But they learn that the Superman and Batman at the demonstration were themselves robots. And while Superman used a giant chain to lasso the mechanomen, Batman and Robin took down a Joker and Luthor, who began their new partnership in a jail cell. On the splash page and the various panels inside, I love the Joker mobile. It was, had the style, the typical style of the 50s automobiles, the big tank-like size compared to today. And the 50 style, I would love if someone would build a replica. Now, the Alex Ross book mythology about his DC work, there was a section where he talked about and showed some pictures of his brother modified an old Studebaker, which was an older make of automobile, which is, has gone out of business. And Alex Ross's brother modified it into the 50s Batmobile. Although, I saw this morning that building replicas of famous vehicles like the various versions of the Batmobile in the comic book or movies is the same as copyright infringement. And this was an early version of Lex Luthor as a business executive, which Lex would become full-time when John Byrne began his Man of Steel miniseries, which rebooted all the Superman and his continuity in the mid-80s. And this was a great story, and it's no surprise that it's been reprinted as often as it has been. Luthor and Joker were a difficult challenge to Superman and Batman. The two villains did a great job of keeping the world's funniest team off track through most of the story, and they were able to counter every move our heroes made. And I enjoyed that Superman and Batman both had to use detective work. And the fact that the minor detail of the extra clothes, we don't know, it's not explained what the extra clothes were, but it allowed Superman to help crack the case. And I enjoy seeing that when stories show Superman using his brain. You know, today in most, you know, Superman stories, he provides a muscle, and Batman is considered, you know, the brain, the superhero who uses his brains. I enjoy seeing a Superman who uses his brain as much as his superpowers. Although, in the early, one of the early issues of the New 52 Superman title, he does use his brain to outthink the villain that he's facing, especially the issue where he fights the enemy that's invisible to his all his vision powers, yet everyone else could see. Well, on page 7, I thought Superman was a little harsh on Lois, convincing her not to meddle, but part of that, I can see that he's concerned for her safety, but, you know, sometimes the Silver Age Superman can be a little harsh. And on page 8, it's rare so far in the Silver Age to see Bruce Wayne involved in presenting himself as a bait to lure Luthor and Joker into Superman and Batman's trap. And on page 9, it was a great idea for Superman to disguise himself as one of the Mechano-Men to infiltrate Joker and Luthor's factory, even despite the fact that the Joker and Luthor eventually saw through his disguise. On page 11, Superman and Batman took out Joker's and took a page out of Joker's and Luthor's book, disguising their own robots at the exhibition of the Mechano Men to fool the real villains. So, Superman and Batman's robots trump Luthor and Joker's robots. On page 12, in the panel when we see the Mechano Men breaking down the gate to the sub-treasury, we don't see any security guards present, but I guess during the Silver Age, when Superman was around, maybe they didn't feel a need to have guards. While justice was served in the end, the Joker and Luthor were a very tough challenge for the world's finest team. Now, at the end here, I do want to spend a minute kind of looking at one part of this story just to think about it and take it to its logical conclusion. First of all, where did Luthor and Joker get the money to develop and build the Mechano Men and buy a factory? I don't know about how much Mechano Men cost in 1957, but Mechano Men don't come cheap these days. You know, why not take the money that it would have, whatever amount of money it would have taken to build the Mechano Men to begin with, and Luthor and Joker could have retired and lived a life of luxury, you know, at their leisure. But I guess some people aren't happy unless they have someone to serve as a target for them to take down. It's not like we don't have enough of those people around these days. But it's not a criticism. It's just one of those fun things to think about with these Silver Age stories. But in the end, I have to give this story 5 Superman capes out of 5. And just for the reasons I've given. After this, the end of this story, there was a 2/3 page which was a trivia feature, Quick Quiz, written and drawn by H.T. Elmo, which was a reprint from a previous issue of Action Comics, according to the Grand Comic Book Database at comics.org. The first panel said, "Can ants swim?" And the answer, according to this, was, "Yes, they can. They can cross large streams by merely forming their bodies into a compact ball." My question is, I wonder how they draw straws to decide who's going to be on the bottom. But maybe they wind up rolling so everyone gets wet. The next panel was, "How much water can an elephant drink?" And the answer was, "When it quenches its thirst, the average elephant can consume as much as 15 gallons of water at one time." That's one thirsty elephant. I just hope one doesn't knock on my door and ask for a drink of water. The next panel says, "Can diamonds wear out?" And the answer is yes. For example, diamonds used in fine glass engraving plants or factories are worn out by use in 6 to 8 weeks. And finally, the final question is red flannel warmer than white? And the answer is no. Red flannel and white flannel of the same grade and weight are equally warm. Okay, but what about black flannel? Well, that's for another time. The bottom third of the page was an ad for Winchester roller skates, and the company was could be found in New Haven, Connecticut. The next page was a humor strip, Lionel and His Lions, written, drawn, and lettered by Henry Boltonoff, while circus master of ceremonies Lionel complimented two guys doing a horse act. They appreciated their compliment, but they were having trouble breaking into big money, so they were earning more money at the park. And so, after the circus was over, Lionel was curious, so when he went to the park, he found out they made extra money by giving pony rides. And after some more promos for some other podcasts, we'll take a look at the two stories at the end of World's Finest Comics number 88, including the final answer to the 5,000 prize slogan contest that we followed in these Superman family of titles in just a moment.
I hope believe he was really dead. I didn't know what I could say to you.
Hush, child. We know. We know.
I was there. I watched him fight that thing. I watched him die. I didn't do anything but watch him die.
Lois, Lois, now listen. It's not your fault. You did all you could. Everyone did everything they could. Now you've got to get on with your life. We all have.
The battle is over. A hero has fallen.
Miss Lane, I monitored Superman when I arrived. I cannot pick up any brain activity at all.
As the city mourns, a family comes to grips with the loss of their son.
I keep coming back here to the North Pasture, to where he first came into our lives, to say goodbye.
His fellow heroes feel regret.
Oh, if only I could have helped him, Lex.
While his enemies see opportunity.
Well, now I'm back on top. And you can't do one blessed thing about it. You're dead. You're nothing. Metropolis is mine again. And you are an empty, lifeless, withering husk.
Worst of all, his true love has to learn to live without him.
Goodbye, Kal-El.
This January, from Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by SupermanHomepage.com and SupermanPodcastNetwork.com begin their coverage of the second part of the Death and Return of Superman trilogy. Every Thursday, you are invited to join hosts Michael Bailey and Jeffrey Taylor as they explore how his friends, loved ones, bitter enemies, and fellow heroes deal with the loss of the Man of Steel. A City in Mourning. A world without Superman. A funeral for a friend.
Hey everybody, my name is Michael Bailey. And this is the trailer with a truly epic ending to my new show about Batman, appropriately titled Bailey's Batman Podcast. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a weekly program that looks at a month in the life of the Dark Knight Detective, starting with the books bearing a March 1983 cover date, which is where my solid run of the character's comics begins, and moving forward until... well, at least until the books that came out in 2005, because that's where the solid run ends. Each week, I will give you a full synopsis and review of every major ongoing Batman title, with brief stops along the way to look at the important specials, miniseries, one-shots, and Elseworld stories, just to keep things interesting. I'll also be telling you what other books Batman appeared in that month, as well as what was going on elsewhere in the DCU. It is going to be all Batman, all the time, as I look at over 20 years of the character's history. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the epic ending to this trailer. You ready? The first appearance of Jason Todd. Death in the Family. Nightfall. Epic. No Man's Land. Do you have chills yet? All of that and more will be covered on Bailey's Batman Podcast every Tuesday at BaileysBatmanPodcast.com.
Rocketed as a baby from the exploding planet Krypton, Kal-El grew to manhood on Earth, whose yellow sun and lighter gravity gave him fantastic superpowers. In the city of Metropolis, he poses as TV newsman Clark Kent, but battles evil all over Earth and beyond as Superman. Superman in the Bronze Age is a weekly podcast following the adventures of Superman from 1970 to the Byrne reboot in 1986. Follow along at SupermanInTheBronzeAge.blogspot.com.
The second story from World's Finest Comics number 88 starred Green Arrow. In the six-page story, The Imprisoned Archer, drawn by George Papp. And in this one, Green Arrow and Speedy travel to Vermont to attempt to stop a crime spree in the city despite Green Arrow's sprained leg. Green Arrow is captured by the gang and unmasked and photographed. And the gang would use public records in an attempt to learn his secret identity. But Green Arrow was able to use his trick arrows to leave enough clues to allow Speedy to learn the hideout of the gang and free Green Arrow, as well as capture the gang, who were unable to ID Green Arrow because, as a security precaution, Green Arrow wore a full face mask. And after the story, there was a three-page feature which listed only some of the winners of DC's 5,000 prize slogan contest, giving their name, city, and state. And since there were too many winners to list all in one issue, they divided them up into various titles. Winners whose last names began with the letters A, B, E, and I, were their names were listed in the this month's issues of Rex the Wonder Dog, Superman, Wonder Woman, and House of Secrets. Winners with the last names beginning with the letters C, J, and K were listed in Our Army at War, Showcase, Tomahawk, and Three Mouseketeers. Winners whose last names began with the letters D, F, G, or H, not H, X, were listed in All-Star Western, All-American Men of War, Strange Adventures, and Real Screen Comics. Winners whose last names began with the letters H, N, R, or Y, funny, almost looks like an abbreviation for Henry, or a misspelling of the name Henry. Anyway, they were listed in Our Fighting Forces, The Adventures of Martin and Lewis, Detective Comics, and Robin Hood Tales. Winners whose names began with the letters L, M, Q, or U were listed in the inside the this month's issues of Mr. District Attorney, My Greatest Adventures, Hopalong Cassidy, and this particular issue of World's Finest Comics. Winners whose names began last names began with the letters P, T, or W were listed in the pages of House of Mystery, Big Town, G.I. Combat, and Action Comics. And finally, winners whose last names began with the letters O, S, V, or Z were listed in this month's issues of Blackhawk, Tales of the Unexpected, Star Spangled War Stories, and Adventure Comics. Now, what isn't given is the winning slogan and who the grand prize winner was. And as far as that goes, we're not told what each winner did receive. When I did a little bit of what research I was able to do, I found on the website scottyadelman.livejournal.com, and I'll leave this link in the show notes. He wrote about this contest in a blog entry, and he said for the winning slogan was not listed, nor the grand prize winners' names. But he said the winning slogan was for the best in comics entertainment, and showed the Superman DC National Comics logo with the slogan, The Line of Stars. Although, in one comment, a person wrote that, claimed this was not the winning slogan because this particular one was used as early as 1953. And I was not able to find anything else about this slogan. So, hopefully, if I can remember, I'm going to write this down on my notepad that'll carry with me to MegaCon. And I hope to be able to ask Mark Waid when hopefully I'm able to meet him at MegaCon and see if he knows about this contest, and you could share his knowledge about it. So, yeah, way to run a contest, DC. But then maybe this was just a marketing ploy to get more kids to buy DC Comics. With the amount of names that they listed, I guess it would have worked in that regard. Well, after that was a two-page humor strip, Charlie Cannonball, written, drawn, and lettered by Henry Boltonoff. And in this strip, Charlie slept so hard that his alarm clock wouldn't wake him up. So he set his cannon to go off at 5 o'clock in the morning to make sure that he would hear the alarm and get up when he planned to. The third and final story of this issue starred Tomahawk in the six-page tale, A Pistol for Tomahawk, drawn by Fred Ray. The writer is unknown. Tomahawk saved a British dandy who was selling fancy pistols along the frontier after he was captured in a Mohawk camp. After that was a full-page ad for the Stevens Credit Sales from Nashville, Tennessee, where he could earn money by selling religious or patriotic slogan cards for money. After that was a full-page public service announcement, which was... this one was not listed in the comics.org entry for World's Finest number 88. It was titled A Date with Effie, where it was about Stan, who volunteered at a hospital, and he helped maintain the multi-channel radio system for all the patients to be able to listen to the radio station of their choice. And because the machine was so efficient, the engineers at the hospital called it Effie for short, or as a nickname. And on the back cover was an ad where you could earn money or premium prizes by selling Cloverine Salve, and that was by the Wilson Chemical Company of Tyrone, Pennsylvania. And that does it for this issue of World's Finest Comics. After some more promos for some comic book podcasts, we'll take a look at elsewhere in DC Comics with the May-June 1957 cover date.
The dawn of an age. The founding of a family.
You know we haven't done enough research into the effects of cosmic rays.
We've got to take that chance.
Conditions are right tonight. Let's go.
They're penetrating the ship. Our shielding isn't strong enough.
I feel like I'm burning up.
Too heavy. Can't move.
Too heavy.
We're all alive.
I feel so strange.
You're fading away. I can't see you at all anymore.
Look what's happened to you. You're... Angel.
Oh, Reed, not you too!
What happened to me? To all of us?
I can fly!
We gotta use that power to help mankind, right?
And so was born the Fantastic Four.
For soon the Mole Man will have the entire world in his power!
I am the mightiest living mortal on Earth, and half mankind shall feel that might.
The Fantastic Four. Little do they dream they're the palms in the hands of Dr. Doom.
Human Torch will be the Puppet Master's next victim.
You Earthlings can't change the way I can. That means I'm the most powerful person on Earth.
I've been expecting you, for I am the Thinker.
I vow never to return, my lord, until the Fantastic Four are no more and the planet Earth is no more.
You're in the presence of the awesome Ralatots, King of Kings, Master of Men, and Lord of the Seven Suns.
Fool, you're just a muscular freak, blind or whole.
Stop! You must not end on the castle of Diablo.
My journey has ended. This planet shall sustain me until it has been drained of all elemental life. So speak, Galactus.
Flame on!
It's clobbering time!
The Fantastic Four from the very beginning. Witness the origins of a legend. The Fantasticast. FFcast.libsyn.com.
in a world where planets die.
I have come to the conclusion Krypton is doomed.
Did I hear him right?
Where good and evil fight a never-ending battle.
But millions of people will die.
Millions! Once again, the press underestimates me.
One man will become a hero.
Every world needs its heroes, Clark. They inspire us to be better than we are. And they protect us from the darkness that's just around the corner.
One man rise to the challenge.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird!
It's a plane!
One man will wear spandex.
Well, one thing's for sure, nobody's gonna be looking at your face.
Mom?
Well, they don't call them tights for nothing.
Presenting The Thrilling Adventures of Superman, a podcast looking at the Man of Steel's history via his earliest adventures in comics, radio, and film. Featuring reviews, commentary, creator spotlights, and more. Join the adventure at GreatKrypton.com.
Lancers, I've called you here to this unprecedented gathering because we face an unprecedented danger. An enemy we don't yet fully understand. It was for this moment that we were created. But I don't need to tell you your duty. I don't need to tell you who we are.
Chosen by the mystic guardians of the universe.
Recruited from across the galaxy for their bravery and courage.
The best and brightest join to fulfill a solemn oath.
In brightest day.
In blackest night.
No evil shall escape my sight.
Let those who worship evil's might
beware my power.
Green Lantern's light.
Green Lantern's Light, a monthly podcast covering the adventures of Hal Jordan, John Stewart, Guy Gardner, and the entire Green Lantern Corps from 1984 through today.
Say the oath. Join the Corps.
Green Lantern's Light. Available monthly at greenlanternslight.com.
You are cordially invited to attend a podcast that observes the unfolding events of history. Come with me and observe the birth and growth of a legend. From the pages of a 10-cent pulp comic book to the newspapers, radio program adventures, theatrical films, and more. Witness the dawn of the superhero. Golden Age Superman, available on iTunes and at goldenagesuperman.libsyn.com. Every legend has a beginning.
Elsewhere in DC Comics, there were 31 titles which carried the May or May-June 1957 cover date. And all of these were published during the month of March 1957. And most dates are approximate because complete records are not available for this era. Beginning around March 5th, with the May-June issue of The Adventures of Rex the Wonder Dog, number 33, edited by Julius Schwartz, and it featured all three stories in this issue. The Trail of the Golden Hawks, the third story, the third and final story of the issue, was illustrated on the cover, but there was a blurb which also mentioned the first story, Watchdog of the Range, as well as the second story starring Detective Chimp, titled The Mystery Monkey from Zanzibar. Also that date, around that date, the May-June issue of Big Town number 45, also edited by Julius Schwartz. The May-June issue of Falling in Love number 11, which featured the issue's fourth and final story on the cover, Love Me, Love Me Not. And finally, on that for that date, Our Army at War number 58, edited by Robert Coniger, with a cover drawn by Joe Kubert, which illustrated The Fighting Snowbird, I believe the first story of the issue. Published around March 7th, the May-June issue of Girls Love Stories number 47, which featured the issue's fourth and final story on the cover, titled Sleeping Heart. Also around this date, the issue number 62 of House of Mystery, edited by Julius Schiff, which also illustrated the fourth and final story of the issue on the cover. On the cover, is the title begins, The Secret Of, and the inside story is titled The Amazing Stone Faces. And finally for this date, the May-June issue of Robin Hood Tales number 9, edited by Robert Coniger, and DC would publish this issue through what began with issue number 7, and would its final issue would be number 14, which would be about 5 more issues. And I'm not sure who or if anyone would pick up this title after DC stops publishing it. Published around March 12th, Black Hawk number 112, edited by Jack Schiff, which featured the issue's fourth and final story on the cover, The Eighth Black Hawk. Also around this date, the May-June issue of House of Secrets number 4, also edited by Jack Schiff, which featured the issue's fourth and final story on the cover, Master of the Unknown. Also around this date, Real Screen Comics number 110, which featured two stories starring Fox and a Crow, as well as one story each for Tito and his burrito, and another for Flippity and Flop. We have a first issue coming out this month, the May-June issue of Sergeant Belko number 1, which was based on the popular 50s comedy about a crooked sergeant in the Army, who's the main character and hero of the show, as well as this comic. And this title would last for 18 bi-monthly issues. So it'll be around for a couple of years. Published around March 14th, the May-June issue of Mr. District Attorney number 57, edited by Jack Schiff, and it featured the issue's fourth and final story on the cover, The Cop with a Convict Father. Also around this date, Our Fighting Forces number 21, edited by Robert Coniger, with a cover drawn by Joe Kubert, which illustrated the issue's first of four stories on a cover, The Bouncing Baby of Company B, which I guess refers to a grenade, if judging by the cover. Also around this date, Superman number 113, edited by Mort Weisinger, of course. And in this issue, a great three-part novel, The Superman of the Past, which is a previously untold story about Jor-El on Krypton, judging by the cover. Also around this date, Tomahawk number 48, which featured the issue's third of four stories on the cover, The Legends of Tomahawk. Published around March 19th, the May-June issue of My Greatest Adventures number 15, edited by Jack Schiff, which featured the issue's third and final story on the cover, I Was Tried by the Jury of Villains. Also around this date, Showcase number 8, the May-June issue, edited by Julia Schwartz, which featured the third appearance of the Flash in Showcase, and it featured the issue's second story, The Coldest Man on Earth, which was the first appearance and origin of Captain Cold. And finally for this date, Tales of the Unexpected number 13, which featured the fifth and final story on the cover, The Face Behind the Mask. Published around March 21st, The Adventures of Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, number 37, which did not feature any particular story title on the cover. All-American Men of War, number 45, edited by Robert Conniger, which featured the issue's first of four stories on the cover, Combat Waterboy. Yeah, that sounds like the dangerous job for the low man on the totem pole of a platoon or a patrol. Also that for this date, G.I. Combat number 48, edited by Robert Conniger, which featured the issue's first of four stories on the cover, No Fence for a Jet. Also for this date, the May-June issue of Western Comics number 63, edited by Julia Schwartz, which featured Powell Smith and The Secret of the Indian Rattle, and other Western characters which were featured in their own stories in this issue were Nighthawk, Rodeo Rick, and the Wyoming Kid. And finally for this date, Wonder Woman number 90, which was edited by Robert Conniger, and there were three stories in this issue, and I'm not sure which story the cover illustrates, if at all. It showed a giant Wonder Woman holding a tiny Wonder Woman in her hand. But moving on to March 26th, or around that date, Action Comics number 228, which featured the Man of Steel story, Superman's Super Skyscraper. Also appearing in their own stories in this issue were Congo Bill and Tommy Tomorrow. Also around this date, Adventure Comics number 236, featuring the Superboy story, Clark Kent's Super Dad, which showed Pa Kent wearing his own super suit. And Pa Kent doesn't look any better in a super suit than I would. So I guess it's a good idea that I don't own a Superman suit. Also appearing in their own stories in this issue were Aquaman and Green Arrow. Also published around this date, Detective Comics number 243, edited by Jack Schiff, which featured the story Batman the Giant. And also appearing in their own stories in this issue, Roy Raymond and the Martian Manhunter. Also published around this date, the May-June issue of Hoplong Cassidy, number 123, edited by Julia Schwartz. Star-Spangled War Stories is the final issue for this date, edited by Robert Conniger, issue number 57, which featured the issue's first of four stories in the cover, Call for a Frogman. And finally, published around March 28th, 1957, along with World's Finest Comics number 88, were Strange Adventures number 80, edited by Julia Schwartz, which did not feature a particular story on the cover, and the May-June issue of The Three Mouseketeers number 8. Next episode, we will feature the Superman comic books, cover dated July 1960. Superman, number 138, and Action Comics, number 266. And in 2 weeks, we will have the MegaCon 2012 preview, where I will go over some of the guests. I'll concentrate on the comic book guests, since I don't really get into getting autographs from, you know, the various media guests, or like TV and movie actors and actresses, mainly because they can't afford to buy, you know, their autographs, as well as I'll give you some of the panels that catch my interest, and I'll be sharing which ones I definitely plan to go to, concentrating on the DC panels, which I volunteered to cover for the Superman homepage, and owner Steve Eunice. And I will follow up that episode with other parts, which will feature some of the panels, which I hope to be able to record, as well as interviews from the floor. And in 3 weeks, we will return to our regular schedule with the Superman Family comic book cover dated June 1957. Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen, number 21. And once again, if you're interested in going to MegaCon, check out all the details at the website www.megaconvention.com. And drop me an email or send me a message on Facebook to the Superman Fan Podcast group or page, or message me on Twitter at Superman Podcast. I'd like to get to meet you in person at MegaCon, so if you're going to be there, let me know and we'll set up a time and place to meet. I do hope to finally meet fellow podcaster Scott Gardner, who does the Two True Freaks podcast, and this year, I believe, moved to the Orlando area. We missed meeting last year because he had sent me a Facebook message, and I didn't check in until Saturday night, which was the only day he was able to make it. And so I missed out, but hopefully I won't make that same mistake again. And so once again, go to megaconvention.com to learn all the details about MegaCon, and I hope to see you there. This concludes another episode of the Superman Fan Podcast. The home website is thesupermanfanpodcast.blogspot.com. Episodes are also available on iTunes and most other podcast aggregators, as well as supermanfanpodcast.wordpress.com and the Internet Archive at archive.org. Your emails are always welcome at supermanfanpodcast@gmail.com, and I look forward to reading them. The Superman Fan Podcast is a proud member of the following: the League of Comic Book Podcasters at comicbooknoise.com/league, the Comics Podcast Network at comicspodcasts.com, the Superman Web Ring of Websites, and the Superman Podcast Network, which you can find at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com, where you can find podcasts covering every era of the Man of Steel from the Golden Age to today. The theme music for this podcast is titled Plans in Motion, composed by Kevin MacLeod, part of the royalty-free music library at incompetech.com. You can join the Superman Fan Podcast group and page on Facebook, and follow the podcast on Twitter at Superman Podcast. Superman and all related characters and images are trademark and copyright of DC Comics. Any artwork displayed with the show notes is for entertainment purposes only. I make no claim of ownership to the images shown, nor do I earn any money or profit from this podcast. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Superman Fan Podcast. Join me next week as together we'll crash through the time barrier to fly into the past and explore the Silver Age adventures of Superman. And don't forget to wear your red indestructible cape. As always, thanks to Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, creators of Superman.